Hey guys, this is Lisa, and before we start the show, I want to make sure that you're aware that we have brand new, super cool Boundless t-shirts in the Boundless store. Now, there are sometimes shirts that you get when you just run a 5K and they're kind of lame, and then there's this kind of shirt that's soft, it's a V-neck, it's really awesome. I actually wear it out and about. And better yet, this is your opportunity to show that you're part of the Boundless family, part of the Boundless tribe, and you're supporting Boundless by getting a t-shirt because it enables us to make more articles, more shows, kind of reach more single young adults like yourself. And it's like, hey, give to Boundless and we're going to give you this t-shirt. So not only is it fun because we're heading into the holiday season, but also it's just an opportunity for you to say, hey, Boundless is awesome. Boundless is something that I'm into, and maybe tell your friends as well. So go to boundless.org, click on shop. And if you just scroll down, you're going to see our shirts. We have them in all sizes. Again, they're about $20, and you buying a t-shirt is going to help us here at Boundless. So get your Boundless t-shirt. We'll probably ask you eventually to send in a photo of yourself wearing it. You know, you've seen us on the team wearing ours. So have fun with it. We hope to see you in your shirt soon. So go to boundless.org, click on shop, and you'll see the shirt there on the page.
Boundless Show.
Well, you can impress your family at Thanksgiving
with some
trivia, right? And quiz them.
Well, happy Thanksgiving weekend, everyone. Jay Milbrandt is our culture guest this week, and he is going to be talking about the faith of the pilgrims. Very appropriate for this weekend. Hey, this is Lisa Anderson. Welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. Later on in the show, we have a girl who is kind of feeling burnt out on her current ministry opportunity and her current calling, which she's doing full time, and is wondering, is this sense of restlessness something that she could deal with, or should she be moving on? I get a chance to give her a little bit of advice on that. In the meantime, here we are for our roundtable, and we're very grateful to have at least one of our usual suspects, Jake, here. Hey, Jake.
What it be, Lisa?
What it be Thanksgiving weekend? Awesome.
It be indeed.
That's your Thanksgiving edition of that. Excellent. We also have John and Ashley Durant here. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Oh, a married couple. We occasionally let you on the show.
Thanks.
This will be fun. It's going to be
Did
good
you frisk
because
them?
Given yeah, right. Given the dynamics of this conversation topic, this is going to be good. Because it's Thanksgiving weekend, we talk about being thankful, and then we talk about shopping. And that's what we're going to talk about today because those are very closely related. No, they're not. That is so sad. But you know, all y'all out there, that you're thinking about Christmas coming up. You are fretting about your Black Friday shopping, your Cyber Monday shopping, the money you've already spent, the money you're going to spend. You don't even know what you're doing. Okay. So we're here to offer some advice and some consolation on that front. So let's talk shopping, y'all. I want you to just talk about Black Friday first in general, the historicity of it in your own lives, good and bad and ugly. Where do you kind of fall on the spectrum of love it, hate it, could take it or leave it, whatever?
Well, I love Black Friday shopping. I've gone every year since I could
Which
drive.
Which really is like Black Thursday shopping now because everyone's opening up early.
Ugh. But I don't,
Another
I don't
point
usually
of contention.
Go on Thursday. Yeah.
Okay.
You
I
have
feel
standards.
Weird about that. I do.
Yeah.
Before
You're like,
midnight.
I will shop till I drop on Friday. Thank you very much.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
I will get up at 4 a.m.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so I've gone every year since I could drive pretty much with different friends, with my sister, with my mom, and pretty much always am Christmas shopping, but then also browsing for myself.
Okay.
And yeah, I just love everything about the holiday feel and the high energy, and kind of reminds me of the movie Jingle All the Way back in the 90s. You know, there's like the mall scene where there's just thousands of people and it's crazy and
That's
it feels like
the worst
Christmas.
Scene in the movie.
I know. Uh-huh. But for some reason, it like makes me feel all like, oh, yay, it's the holidays.
Yeah. Okay. Now, are your shopping companions equally as excited about it, or are you dragging them along?
Oh, no. Well, they were all excited until I started dating and then married John and dragged him with me, and he really could care less about shopping.
He's a hater.
John. I wouldn't call myself a hater, you know, but like you were asking, you know, how often have we gone Black Friday shopping? I did not do it. In fact, I avoided it at all costs up until meeting Ashley and dating Ashley.
Uh-huh.
I'm not the biggest fan, not going to lie.
Like mostly just because of having to get up or just because of the crowds or all of the above?
Yeah, it's not getting up. I'm a morning person.
Okay.
It's definitely, let me put it this way. Have you ever walked into a JCPenney and seen a grown man on the verge of a mental breakdown? That's me. So basically, I'm a kind of routined guy. I like things sequenced. You know, you're out on the road, there's rules.
Oh, yeah.
In the store, there's no rules.
Yeah.
Anything goes.
Yeah.
It's the Thunderdome.
It's like full on crazy. Okay, Jake, how about you?
I loathe pretty much everything about Black Friday.
Okay.
However, I am a very experienced vet when it comes to Black Friday shopping. I have been forced due to economics to take advantage of the Black Friday deals. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, my parents, when I was in my senior year of high school, said, all right, if you want a laptop getting ready to go to college, then you can go get this one at Best Buy because they're bundling it with a printer on Black Friday. And if you can get that one, we'll pay for it. And being the thrifty young man that I was, I went and waited in line from 10 p.m. on Thursday night until 6 a.m. on Friday morning.
Wow.
In the sub-freezing temperatures of a late November midnight in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, in fact, get high enough, or I was, you know, far enough in the front of the line that I was, in fact, able to get that laptop.
Wow.
But it took me another 24 hours to gain my body heat back.
Yeah, you perished in the process and had to just will it to someone. Yeah. But yeah.
At that point, I was like, I'll never do this again. My mom loved it, but I was like, I'll never do it again.
Okay.
But then I was a few years later, I really wanted to get a PlayStation 3. I was a young dad and a husband, and I worked full-time. I was going to school full-time. I was like, I can get one thing for myself.
I
can get a
it.
PlayStation 3.
Okay.
So the Walmart I go to get it, they're all out. But then I find out another Walmart outside of town has a PlayStation 3. And so I book it about 10 miles out of town to this other Walmart. They've got the PlayStation 3. I buy it. I feel great. About 6 hours later, I felt terrible and guilty. What am I doing? I shouldn't be spending this money on myself. And I returned that PlayStation 3 on the very same day that I bought it.
Okay.
And so those are probably my best and saddest Black Friday.
Yeah. Okay. And both of those instances involved you buying things for yourself.
Yeah. For me.
So that's problematic in and of itself. But it's okay. No, I've done Black Friday shopping as well. And I feel like for me, it's very confusing. I'm kind of actually with John on this of like, I like to know that there is order, that there is like there's not a limited quantity of stuff, like the whole concept of doorbusters. And you go there and there are no doorbusters. People have already bought them. They're giving away freebies and they're just like, let's be honest, kind of crappy ornaments that no one even wants. I mean, it's just like for me, I'm like, why am I up early like doing this thing? But there is a feeling of, and I kind of want to turn a corner here. I feel like, okay, so none of us are like in high school or college. We're all, you know, we've moved beyond that. I feel like now, the other day I went to the mall. Now, granted, it's not Black Friday. It was super sad. I went because, hello, Chick-fil-A. there was no one walking around the mall. Do people even go to malls? I mean, again, if this is like, Ashley is talking about Jingle All the Way, which was like in the 90s when people went to malls. you know, the hustle, the bustle, the Christmas carols and stuff. Is that even like expected anymore or do people experience that?
I don't know. I actually noticed that last year on Black Friday when I went that the store seemed like all the stores I went to seemed a lot more empty.
They
than
weren't
in past.
That empty.
Not empty enough for John.
Like in the past, I remember waiting in a huge line outside Target, like wrapped all the way around the parking lot. And this year it was just like, walk right in, go right to the stuff you want. There wasn't like this huge line. I mean,
like
there was
the anticipation and
right.
the spectacle of it.
Yeah. So I think because of online shopping, it probably is less so. But
okay.
I still go.
Okay. Just kind of part of the experience. And I will say that for those who do it, I mean, there are some rewards. I mean, they still are giving great deals and the big box stores now probably capitalize on it more than malls per se. But okay, so let's actually talk about shopping. And Christmas. And because we are actually right now at a point with millennials who about half of millennials are expecting to be in debt after Christmas. In fact, we read here at Boundless that the average American is going to spend $700 on Christmas gifts this year, which actually totals $465 billion, which if all of us just agreed not to shop this Christmas, we could pay off our national debt or put a dent in it. Not quite pay it off. So,
like a tiny dent.
What?
Like
a little piece of it. Yeah.
I mean, maybe if we did that for 50 years.
We could pay off the Monaco portion of our national debt. Okay, whatever.
I'm all in for that though, Lisa. Let's start that campaign.
I know. I mean, it's like, or let's just draw
50
names,
years of like, no Christmas
in the world. Let's just draw a name of someone. There we go.
Is your last name Crank, Christmas? Christmas.
Yeah. So what? I mean, what are you guys feeling as far as like
warlock.
What's your gift scenario this year? What are you stressed out about? Who do you have to buy for? Are you like, have you been shopping throughout the year? God bless you, or have you? Just like realize that you're now going to have to spend this $700 in the next couple of weeks. Where are you with your whole gift buying and giving scenario?
Shopping throughout the year.
Okay.
Come on, Lisa. Let's get real.
John, if you don't shop throughout the year, then you end up on Black Friday, which you hate. So you need to pick or choose here.
You
can't have it both
no
ways.
No shopping period.
Yeah, no. The way I see it, one day a year is much better than every weekend. I don't know.
procrastinate, cram.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. All the way.
Okay. Or Ashley might help you out and buy a few of your gifts.
Usually
for you.
I do. Yeah.
Now, okay. In all seriousness, we've decided to like draw names this year for families.
Okay.
That way we don't all have to buy everybody gifts and you know, that saves everybody money who's involved. So, you know, we might buy one gift to someone from me, one gift to someone from Ashley, and then so on and so forth. So I think that's, you know, one way that we can lower that, you know, massive debt thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
For me, I'm fortunate enough to have a wife whose love language is gift giving. And so she's sort of, and she's like a type A personality who's a planner. So she's thinking about it all year long. And probably 3 to 4 months out from Christmas is when she'll really start keeping an eye out for, all right, keeping an eye out for the kids' clues that they're giving her and anybody else's clues and start tucking things away little by little. Whereas gifts is, I appreciate gifts fine, but it's pretty much all the way down at the bottom of my like love language list, so I don't think about it. And I'm actually now reached an age where I feel bad about that because I've realized in the last couple of years that in my extended family, I don't buy anybody anything. Like none of us ever did growing up. And so I never thought about it. I never think about it. And so I have realized that I've left a few people out to dry.
Yeah.
And so now I've got to, you know, sit at the feet of my wife, the sensei, the gift giver sensei.
Well, which is awkward because like my family, we grew up drawing names, which was great because there's like 6 of us kids. And then when people started getting married, it got a little crazy. But then somewhere it like turned a corner where all of a sudden we're expected to buy for everyone. Except that, and I've mentioned this before, when you're the single person, it's like, the family of my sibling, you know, whatever, they get me a gift, but I'm expected to get a gift for every single person in their family. And so then I'm like bringing, you know, 55, 60 gifts because of all the kids and whatever. So it gets a little dicey. And so let's talk a little bit about gift giving etiquette. Specifically, okay, so John and Ashley, you have to speak into this. Jake, you can too because you're married. The whole like, significant other. So you're dating. At what point in the relationship are you supposed to be getting this person a gift? And is it like, hey, am I giving you an Amazon gift card or I'm giving you a diamond necklace? I mean, because there's a continuum there. What do you guys think about that?
That's a good question. I think I think when you're just dating, it's okay to give like smaller gifts, but I think saving the bigger gifts for, you know, after you're engaged or married is sweet because you kind of like build on last year's gift. And if you give the diamond necklace when you've been dating for a month, then when you get engaged, the person's going to be like, what? You gave me like a gift card? You know? So
our love has gone down the tubes.
Exactly. So
exactly.
Yeah. Just building up. It's okay not to do the biggest gesture right away.
Okay.
Obviously, you got to personalize it for the person, I think, and that's the bigger thing, especially early on in a relationship. I accidentally set the bar really high for myself when my wife and I were like on the cusp of dating. We were really good friends, but we hadn't started dating yet. And I was like, I'm going to get her like a gag gift. And so I bought her this plush Disney princess blanket at Walmart. Turns out she loved Disney princesses. It had never come up in our conversations. And she's like, oh, my goodness, he knows me.
Oh,
he gets
goodness.
Me. And so I was like, oh, that was an act. Like, I didn't know at the time. I wanted to play it off and be like, oh, yeah, totally. Now, in hindsight, the expectation is, oh, he gets me at a deep level without me saying anything. And so we had to work through that as a gift giver and non-gift giver.
Yeah, you did.
And I've had to try to up my game, you know, to meet her in the middle somewhere. So it's tough, but it's ultimately it's about, like, that's what was special about it.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I dropped a whole ton of money, but it was about understanding who she was as a person, even though I did it on accident the first time.
Yeah. Okay. What about like in friendships, you know, because I think that's another line that's not easily drawn, like friends exchanging gifts or going out and doing something, you know, together. Hey, let's all do this instead of getting gifts for each other. But then inevitably one friend's going to give you a gift and then you have, I mean, do you have the secret stash of gifts that you just pull out when the friend gives you the gift you weren't expecting?
Oh,
you
I
know
got
we
something
have
for you. Come over to my trunk and
let me
check
give
out my
you
assortment.
This scented candle that, you know, you're a guy and I know you don't want, but it's what I have in my gift closet. Awkward.
I totally have a gift closet like that stuff. Like, yeah, because I feel that a lot with my single friends, more so than my married friends, that they think of getting me a gift for Christmas or for random holidays, and it's so thoughtful. And then I'm like, oh, I should have got them something. And so it's nice to have a stash, but then around Christmas, normally what I do is either like bake cookies or make some sort of like, I don't know, Chex Mix or something and bag it up and give it to all of my single friends because it doesn't cost a lot. But then also it's like, oh, I thought of you and I, like a really nice card.
Yeah.
So I try to think of something that I can do for everyone on a mass scale without spending a ton of money.
Yeah, that's good. I actually, speaking of getting back to the family stuff and talking about like nieces and nephews and stuff, just because it's gotten to be so like, my siblings just keep having kids, people. I basically have now told all my siblings that I'm going to celebrate the nieces and nephews on their birthdays because they get so much stuff at Christmas. Mine will not be missed. And then on their birthday, when it's truly their day and they can be recognized, that's when they're going to get the card from me in the mail with the gift card or whatever. Please do not open my mail, people, and steal my gift cards. That has happened before, too. So it's scary. But yeah, just recognizing them then. And then that sets the expectation for Christmas. So I have told all my siblings, hey, heads up, this is how it's going to go down. So any other tricky gift things you guys have had to navigate, feeling obligation toward or anything?
I have a funny story, actually, about that last question. So basically, I was the one who had a present for my friend for Christmas or birthday or something like that. And I just, you know, I saw it in passing. I thought it would be perfect for him. And I don't even remember what it was, but it was good. And I remember that.
it was so good, I forgot it.
I know, but I showed up with it. He opened it. He's like, oh, this is so awesome. And I got something for you, too. And it was sort of just like what you were talking about with the trunk. He walked up to his bedroom. He comes downstairs with an opened box of Mike and Ike's. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So
was he
that's
joking?
That's a baller move, though.
Like, I mean,
he was not
joking.
He was like, I got this for you. I did snag a few before I gave it to you, but I hope you like these. I don't even like Mike and Ike's.
The crucial thing is, how old were you guys when this happened?
Oh, we were in high school. So,
yeah,
you
that's
know.
Too old. For
anything
that to
goes. No, I think anything goes.
Oh, my goodness. That's good.
I did that to a friend once. Like, even though I'm not a gift giver, when I was about in elementary school, I want to say I was about 10 years old, maybe 11, I was at the store with my mom. And this brand new PlayStation 2 NCAA football game was out. And I was like, Mom, we have to get this for my best friend. And so I did. And this is like a $60 game, right? And yeah, like, what do you, at that age, what does my 10-year-old friend do when I drop a $60 game in his lap unexpectedly? He turns around. He's like, oh, I won this VHS copy of The Grinch from a drawing contest I entered. Here you go, buddy. And, thankfully, I wasn't offended not being a gift person myself. But, yeah, what are you supposed to do at that age when somebody does that? It's a tricky thing. It's tougher when you grow up and you've got those Leslie Knopes in your life.
Oh, man.
That are just like way above and beyond.
Ashley is a Leslie
Knope. Is Ashley,
Knope.
Are you
totally
the Leslie
is.
Knope?
I'm a gift person also, just like your wife.
Yeah. That's funny. Okay, let's talk about, because we're, again, talking to a lot of young adult singles, most of whom are either dating or want to be dating. What about the, I'm going to give this person a gift because I'm maybe kind of interested in them and I want to kind of seed potential for a relationship. What do you guys think about that as the extend the interest in a hopefully non-confrontational kind of way? Have you ever done that or had that done to you?
I mean, that's what worked for me with the Disney princess blanket. Accidentally. I meant it as a gag gift.
So it can work.
Kind of gauge, you know, her sense of humor and be like, oh, that's so funny you got me this kid's blanket. But it ended up being a really sweet romantic gesture. And here we are 12 years later.
Yeah. Okay. I actually
so
had
it can
that.
Work.
I had it happen to me in a non-good way where a guy, so this was back in the, I mean, now we're all digital and stuff. But when, not a mixed tape, but a mixed CD in college. And this guy whom I did not know really well, put all these songs on that he said made him think of me and gave it to me. And I just thought it was creepy because, again, there was no established relationship. We went to college together and it was just too much.
How many songs did it have on it?
It had like 12 or 13. Ooh. It was a full session.
That's a lot of songs to make him think of somebody he doesn't know.
And they were all like either romantic or else like super intense worship songs and stuff. So it was just, I felt like it was a bit much. I would not encourage.
Yeah, which is
personally
worse.
Which was flattered. Worse. I don't know. Ashley, if you want to do that, be my guest.
And then the ones that are like over spiritualized, like, hey, I bought a goat to give to this village in your name, and you're like, thanks. I mean, because then you're like, I want to help the people of this village, but the fact that it was given in my name by someone I don't know about that. I don't know. Any other thoughts about that? About the gift giving? We had a listener actually wonder about this, like a crush, you know, can I give him a gift? I don't know.
Just make sure it ends up with the right girl or guy.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to give it to them, make sure that they actually get it.
Is that an Office reference?
It was an Office reference.
Yeah. And Jim makes that teapot for Pam. Great moment.
Okay.
Classic moment.
That's good.
You know what? Just watch that episode of The Office, the Christmas party.
You'll learn
the
everything
White Elephant.
You need to know.
There's good and bad and ugly in there. Most of it bad and ugly.
Okay.
No, but I think, again, it's contextual. You got to have a level of self-awareness to truly recognize where you're at in that relationship and say, you know what, this mix MP3 player with, you know, some crazy Hillsong Bethel worship mixed in with some, I don't know, Ed Sheeran, might not be the right idea if you just talk to somebody once or twice.
Yeah. Or worse, like Eminem or someone. Be careful.
I collapse might not be the best thing to put on there.
So
no, yeah.
Okay.
You definitely have to have like an established, you know, background with the person. If that guy had made you a CD of like inside jokes, then you probably would have thought it was like a lot more entertaining.
Exactly.
This is a guy I could hang out with. But that
Which it's just funny you mentioned that, John, because I actually did have that happen and it was very well received from a guy that I was like, oh, yeah, totally. We talked about that. And that was really funny. And yeah, we ended up dating for a short time before that completely crashed and burned. But at least the CD was great. And
it started off so great.
He actually introduced me to some legit awesome bands. So it all worked out well in the end. So. Well, awesome thoughts, you guys. Those of you out there in listener land, hop over to episode 564, boundless.org, 564. Comment, give us your best ideas. We need ideas about, you know, gifts to give, who to give to, how to pay for all of this. We didn't even get to delve into that too much. So how you're going to go about setting a budget, what that looks like. Let's keep the discussion going, and we will hopefully get some great ideas moving forward. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, hey, as always, we are here now for our culture segment, and we love it when we introduce smart people to you, people that know stuff about stuff that you probably don't know, and today is no exception because It is Thanksgiving if you are listening to this the day that the podcast comes out. But if you're listening to it over the weekend, then it's still Thanksgiving weekend. And quite frankly, hey, who doesn't want a break from all the drama and family conversations that are probably awkward and eating way too much and just being splayed out on the floor and regretting basically that fourth roll that you had and whatever. So fortunately, we have got a dude here in the studio who has written a book on the pilgrims, people, but don't put first grade pilgrims into mind because we're going to get a little bit deeper than that. We will be talking to Jay Milbrandt. He's the author of They Came for Freedom, The Forgotten Epic Adventure of the Pilgrims. So welcome, Jay.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, well, in addition to writing books about the pilgrims, you're actually a lawyer and you have an MBA.
Yeah.
Is that like in your free time, you just accumulate degrees?
No.
Or what are you doing?
I guess I did for a short amount of time, but now, okay. now I'm
finding
trying
yourself,
not.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I do. That's my day job.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. But so you have a special, tell us about your interest in American history and how it led to really the pilgrims and the Puritans.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I was ever really a history person from the beginning, but kind of, you know, as you get older, you sort of want to know things about where you came from, and just like you travel and you like learning about the history of places. And so part of our family lore was that we descended from two of the Mayflower pilgrims. And so I'm like, that's cool. I want to hear more about that.
Cool.
I want to learn more about that. Now, what's kind of discouraging about it is that we had two that we descended from, and one of them was an indentured servant. And the other was a mercenary hired to provide the pilgrims protection. So it wasn't really these two people who came for religious freedom purposes. But nonetheless, they were on the Mayflower. And so I was pretty excited to dive into that a little further.
Okay, so that is very cool. And I have to tell you, I have kind of a cool story, too, because okay. I've actually been in the home of a bona fide pilgrim.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So friends of friends, they're actually Boundless yeah. fans, live in the home of, it was John Alden's daughter.
Okay, yeah.
Outside of Newport.
Yeah.
And I went in their home. It was built in, I want to say, let's see, what do I have? I wrote it down here, 1680.
Wow.
So that's got to be one of the oldest homes on the
that
East
would
Coast.
Be, I would imagine it's be up there.
Okay, so they have literally got this crazy like stove slash hearth that's just a hollowed out
yeah.
brick whatever with a big pot hanging over it and stuff. And anyway, I think the story is super awesome because the woman, the friend of mine who has it's actually her parents that live in the house, John Alden, this is a great Boundless story because we talk a lot about dating mm-hmm. on the Boundless show. So apparently he was the cooper for the Mayflower coming over, the one who made barrels, that was a cooper, was not intending to be a pilgrim and, mm-hmm. you know, was staying in the New World, but he fell in love with Priscilla Peabody. She was a young pilgrim traveling with her parents. And then the captain of the Mayflower, John Smith, both of them were interested
yeah.
in her. And John Smith was like, hey,
yeah.
can you maybe go on my behalf and propose to her because I'm a little bit nervous about
yeah.
it? Hello, junior high behavior. This is what we
yeah.
call guys out on today.
Yeah.
And anyway, Mr. Alden decided that he was just going to go in it for himself and ended up marrying her. And so their daughter built the house that these folks live in. So
oh, funny.
Kind of a fun story.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to pilgrims. Tell us why. Okay, because we're talking to a whole
yeah.
generation of young adults here who really are just trying to forget all the history that they
right.
had to learn because
right.
they're like, I just need to work a job and like earn some money. I don't care
yeah.
about these people. Why should we even care, especially as Christians?
Yeah.
Why does this matter?
Well, you can impress your family at Thanksgiving
well,
with some
yeah.
trivia, right? And quiz them.
yeah.
Yeah, I you know, it is our story mm-hmm. as the founding of this nation, and it still informs a lot of who we are today in terms of religious freedom, and part of what they did was to pave the way for the Constitution, and you know, a lot of the ethos about who we think we are is from them, and you know, it's still so intertwined in the story. I mean, we have these... We bring the pilgrims out every year, right? We parade them out. We have these funny hats and costumes, and we dress like them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't, but some people do. And,
yeah.
and you know, so it's still so much part of our American psyche and where we imagined we came from, that mm-hmm. it's an important story.
Yeah. So for those of us in the U.S., we very much consider England and, you know, many yeah. of the European countries as allies, but there was actual religious persecution going yeah. on. And yeah. a lot of people don't realize that the pilgrims themselves like bounced around a lot before yeah. actually choosing to yeah. make the sail across. Tell us yeah. why, what was going on? Why was there so much hostility towards people who yeah. wanted to separate yeah. in terms of
well, So I had this book when I was a kid that it was a children's book, and it talked a little bit. It had one page, I can remember the picture of these pilgrims, and they were like bound in chains, mm-hmm. and it was talking about religious freedom. And so when I wanted to explore my own story, I went out and looked for like not kids' books but real books on the story, and none of them mentioned religious freedom, or at least they give it this casual like, yeah, hey, they were. Mm-hmm. So I put these things together like, okay, were they really persecuted? And as a lawyer, I'm like, I want to find the evidence. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I went out searching for. And what was interesting to me is that, yeah, they were, it was really bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot of persecution. So the way it worked is the state government controlled the church. They were one and the same. And they would prescribe everything about your faith. So they would tell you when to go to church, what you had to pay for tithes. They would tell you the church services were in Latin, and they would tell you what the service was going to be and what you had to say and what you had to do. And if you wanted to have a Bible study, a private Bible study, no go. If you wanted to read a version of the Bible that you wanted to read, no way. You had to read the state prescribed version of the Bible. So all these things were happening. It was really heavy handed. And so you had this group of people who, they're technically called separatists because they separated themselves from that process. They eventually became the pilgrims. But so they wanted to worship the way they got a hold of a rogue copy of the Bible, the Geneva Bible, and said, that's not how we read it. We read it different. So they wanted to go do something the way they felt and have a personal relationship. And that wasn't allowed. So, you know, they'd be fined, jailed, and some were even murdered, killed on account of their faith, that they wanted to do something different than what was prescribed by the state.
So at this time, give us dates. Like, what time frame are we talking about here?
We're late 1500s, right at the turn into 1600. So 400 years ago.
Okay. Wow. Okay. And now we also have to bookmark this because, again, cultural ignorance and illiteracy. Yeah. You need to give us the difference between the definition between a Puritan and a pilgrim.
Yeah. Yeah.
The both.
Well, and I didn't know that either. So yeah. You have,
hopefully you do now because I just asked you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, hopefully. I'll look it up here.
Okay.
Now, you had the separatists who separated themselves out, and they said, okay, what the state church is doing is wrong, and we want to be different. And then you had the Puritans who said, what the state church is doing is wrong, but we want to purify it from within. So we're still part of it, but we're not, we want to make it better. Mm-hmm. So you have the group that wants to be the ones who go and do its own thing, and then you have the group that wants to make the thing better. And now they both converge and become pilgrims because when they get on, when they leave England, they end up with taking on that title, essentially. Mm-hmm. So two different groups that kind of become one, but they had the same goal of we want to worship in the way we see fit, but it was how to achieve that goal.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the voyage across the Atlantic, because originally my understanding is two ships went out. One didn't make it. The one we know about today is the Mayflower.
Yeah.
So we alluded to the fact that they had bounced around Europe a little bit, trying to find kind of asylum in a sense, and being like, okay, can we worship here? No, pull the trigger on that. So they decided they're going to go the New World.
Yeah.
Tell us about just the specific dangers of that, why they even thought that was going to be a solution.
Yeah. Well, this is crazy. I mean, I think one of the things that we've forgotten about or missed in this story is what an epic adventure this was. And it was dangerous because they knew and they said, you know, we're not all going to make it. There was actually, what I found really interesting is they weren't the first group of pilgrims to even try this. There was another group that went before them and they all died. Mm-hmm. So why they thought this is a good idea, is sort of mind-blowing. I'm not sure we'd want to take that risk today. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine making that decision of like, yeah, I'm going to pack up my kids or my family and cross the Atlantic, and I don't know what we're going to end up with and what we're going to come into. So it was a really dangerous trip. They did start out with two boats. They bought the Speedwell, which is not the Mayflower. That boat almost sank, and they had to turn around halfway across the Atlantic, go back and they tried again. It didn't work. They couldn't fix it. So they all jumped on the Mayflower, overcrowded, and took off on this one boat when the other one got halfway and started leaking. So, I mean, just, it was outrageous that they wouldn't even try that, which is what makes this partly such a great story.
Yeah. So how many started out and how many made it to shore, landing in what we know now today as Massachusetts?
Yeah. So you have around 150 or so that began. They dropped about 50. So you had about two ships that had, in the 70 or so. Yeah. And then they stuck about 100 on. Some people were like, hey, I'm not going to do this anymore. Yeah. So you had about 50 that dropped off and wanted to go back to England and Holland. And then the 100 or so that went on the journey.
Okay. So they do, obviously, we know, somewhat through history, one of the emphases that's always made is how perilous that first year especially was when they landed. They didn't exactly land where they'd intended to.
No.
And now they're just kind of like, okay, literally winter's coming on. Describe what they had to do when they got there, what the new world looked like at the time.
Well, so the journey took them considerably longer. I mean, it took them like 4 months. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be just, 6 to 8 weeks to make this trip. It was bad weather. So they were planning to get over there late fall, early to mid-fall, late summer, and they end up right around the 1st of December. Not a great time to be in New England. Mm-hmm. And they had also wanted to go further south, Virginia area, milder climate, and they ended up in the wrong spot. But it's December. They, for a variety of reasons, they're like, okay, we're just gonna get out here. They've been on the boat for 4 months. They're sick. It's bad. It's bad, right? And so you come into a spot that's about the worst situation you can imagine. Coming in winter, you have no shelter, nothing, no food, and they're really just trying to survive the winter. And you've got almost half the group that dies from just the conditions over winter. No food. They're cold, they're wet most of the time, and you had to be really hardy to make this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we kind of diverge into where we have memories of grade school Thanksgiving projects. We have, the pilgrims on one side, the Indians on one side, weird hats, whatever. Yeah. Then we have some of us saw Pocahontas, it gets all weird.
Yeah.
We can't remember what story is what. How did this first Thanksgiving even come about? And what was public school education has been so stripped of the faith element of the story, we just assume that it's like, oh, all these people sitting around a table eating some corn.
Yeah.
But tell us how this encounter with Squanto even came to be.
Yeah. Okay. So so first of all, we have Squanto, and he's really interesting. So here's some good things to like wow your family with, right, at Thanksgiving. So Squanto, he had actually made as many as 4 transatlantic trips back and forth by the time he met the pilgrims. So remember, they get there, and then this guy walks up to him, and he speaks fluent English, and he's a Native American. So how did that happen? The backstory.
I like never even knew that, how he learned to speak English.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he'd sailed. Okay.
So you have Captain John Smith of Pocahontas, some others, and he had been captured on some of these expeditions, these earlier expeditions, and taken over to England and Spain as a slave, and actually was sold and tried to sell in one of the Spanish slave markets. And so he had this crazy life. And then, winds up, finally gets back home, and these English people show up, and he's the only one that can communicate with them. So we've got Squanto, who really is a hero in the story, that he saves them and teaches them how to catch fish, how to plant corn, how to survive. And without him, I'm not sure if they would have made it, because he was he knew how to get by. Mm-hmm. And how to also navigate the relationships with these various tribes. So we've got him, really interesting character. I think we've lost that part of the story of like, well, why did he know English? Mm-hmm. We don't talk about that. Thanksgiving is a different piece altogether. And so again, here's where you can wow your family, is that you can tell them, yeah, actually Thanksgiving didn't really exist in the way that we think it did. So there were two events that end up getting all mixed together in history. So when Squanto teaches them how to plant crops and harvest them, at the end of that first summer that they have a crop, they decide to have a harvest festival, right? Because they've made it, mm-hmm. They've got food that they can eat finally. So they're like, hey, let's have a celebration, mm-hmm. and they do like good. Well, they're becoming Americans, mm-hmm. good Americans. They eat a ton of food, and mm-hmm. they actually
it's like the
end
original
up
original Golden Corral,
right? Yeah, they actually end up starving or getting near starvation because they just had so much food at this party, right? Yeah. But this was a secular event. I mean, of course, they would have given thanks to God, but it wasn't a church-related event. It was a harvest festival, and we've had harvest festivals mm-hmm. forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, as people have been harvesting crops, we've celebrated those first fruits. Mm-hmm. So, got this harvest festival, and then you've got the following year. There's this drought, and the crop almost withers away. And at, like about the last moment that they can still, the crop is still potentially savable. They decide to have a day of thanksgiving where they petition God. They have a day of prayer, petition God to bring them through this and bring them rain. And so they start off the morning. They go through this entire day of prayer. At the end of the evening, these clouds start billowing up and this rain comes that saves them. Mm-hmm. And so this day of thanksgiving, which was about praying for their survival, and this harvest festival end up getting mixed together. And then 200 years later, this woman named Sarah Josepha Hale, who wrote the song Mary Had a Little Lamb, mm-hmm. She writes a book where she talks about a fictionalized story about Thanksgiving, which is a combination of thanks to God and food. And she goes around and starts petitioning states to create a holiday. She ends up getting the ear of Abraham Lincoln. This is at the close of the Civil War, and Lincoln says, hey, let's have a unifying national holiday to bring us all together after this horrific, horrific war. And he enacts Thanksgiving. So there we are.
And that's where it's been ever since.
We didn't really have a first Thanksgiving in the way yeah. we want to believe we did, yeah. but it's kind of like a Jamba Juice of different events.
Not the way I saw
events,
it in Charlie
know?
Brown Thanksgiving, where yeah. they're doing the popcorn and the toast and all yeah. that. Yeah. Okay. So I want to circle back because, again, just the element of faith that seems to get so lost in this story yeah. is that then many of these folks dispersed and started making other settlements.
Yeah.
Some made it down to Virginia, I mean, yeah. elsewhere. And we have today, like from the Puritans, from some of these folks, legitimate like theological works that, I mean, I think we so think of these people as country bumpkins who just kind of like walked around and planted corn and yeah. whatever. But I mean, thinkers, theologians, a gaggle of folks yeah. who really ended up putting a stake in the ground in terms of religious freedom that yeah. we built kind of the U.S. on yeah. as we became a republic. Yeah. Talk yeah. to us about that, about really yeah. the contribution that they made to who we yeah. are today.
One thing that surprised me a lot was that they were well-read in political science, philosophy, and would commonly cite this stuff, and theology. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And so when the Mayflower got to North America, before they stepped off the ship, they gathered everyone on board and they said, hey, okay, we got to figure out how we're going to, well, there's no government here. We're in a place that there's no king, there's no state church to tell us what to do. So how are we going to do this? And so they wrote a document called the Mayflower Compact that has been cited as the precursor to our Constitution. And they decided we are going to self-govern. And this was the first written document of self-government. Hmm. So they did this amazing work of political science that became foundational for our country and in history. So, they were pioneers.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So we have obviously what happened initially, yeah. the Mayflower, everything happening back in the what really became the, like you said, the early-ish 1600s, yeah. all of that going on. And then the modern day Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, just talk to us a little bit, Jay, about why we should continue to care about this. How can we look to the past to kind of inform, one, as believers, why we should be thankful for what we truly do have and have inherited? And then how do we look forward in history, yeah. really applying some yeah. of these principles?
Yeah. Well, one way that this story has sort of changed our Thanksgiving is that, We think about shopping, we think about food, we think about football, right? As commonly associated. And, I think we're all thankful that we're together with family and friends on those holidays. But it's definitely changed our conversation on the table about it. We're thankful that we can get together and have this conversation, and there's not the sheriff barging in to arrest us or that mm-hmm. concern. And so thankful that we are in a place where we can do that. We mm-hmm. can have that conversation. We can ask tough questions, and we can talk about our faith openly. So for me, that's one thing that's sort of this story has changed. I think also, you know, if you look around the world and the U.S., I mean, there are a lot of places that are under attack in terms of their freedom and being able to talk openly about faith. And so that was the big concern of the pilgrims, that they couldn't speak openly about it. They couldn't practice it, but they also couldn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so we need to guard that. And there are, as I was writing this book, I mean, there were modern analogs throughout the story. I'm like, wow, this is happening right now. Mm-hmm. Or this is just, they dealt with this. Everything that's happening then is happening now, and they've found a way to. So it's enlightening in that you can see how did they handle that situation, and I'm continuously seeing ways that things happening today, separation of church and state, mm-hmm. it was dealt with by the pilgrims.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Such a cool history that we have, and how it's so applicable to today. Okay, y'all, whether you have eaten your Thanksgiving dinner yet or not, or you're just hanging out with the fam over the weekend, if someone asks you, hey, how's your love life? Who are you dating now? Just be like, you know what? I would love to talk about the pilgrims right now. Just introduce, completely change the subject. Just hit them up with some of this newfound knowledge. You can like bring it into the conversation and really use it as a springboard to talk about why we should be thankful for the history that we have and where we are and how it set the course for what we now have access to and all of that. And thankfully, Jay has been here to kind of elucidate some of that for us. It's Jay Milbrandt. The book is They Came for Freedom, The Forgotten Epic Adventure of the Pilgrims. And if you go to boundless.org, search for show 564, and we would love for you to comment just about how you do. Maybe this Thanksgiving will be a little bit different for you in the way that you can kind of think and reflect on your faith and on the U.S. and our history and the freedoms we have. And we just really appreciate you for putting this together. Thanks, Jay.
Thanks for having me. You got the whole world in your hands, got the whole wide world in your hands, and every little thing is under your command, so I will trust your plans. You've got the whole world in your hands. Hardest thing, it's a constant fight in a world that moves at the speed of life to slow the chaos down. But slowing on down is the only way I'll ever hear what you have to say. I need to hear you now, 'cause you've got all of this figured out. You've got the whole world in your hands, got the whole wide world in your hands. Every little thing is under your command, so I will trust your plans. You've got the whole world in your hands.
Well, hey, everyone. As we finish out the show this week, I get to answer this week's inbox from one of our female listeners, and here is what she is wondering about. She says, I'm a female who's been in full-time ministry for over 10 years. I'm 39 and single, but desire marriage. I know God has called me to full-time ministry these last many years, but I'm getting a little tired of it. I wouldn't mind stepping out of ministry, but God hasn't opened any doors and certainly has not opened any doors for a potential mate, even though my desire for a mate is strong. Do you think men are turned off by women who are in ministry full-time? I suppose that's the reason I'm still single, because God has called me to full-time ministry. How can I tell if I'm restless because I want a change and marriage, or because God's telling me to move on? How do you tell if you're burnt out from your ministry, and what do you do when you feel stuck? Well, hey, thanks so much for asking this question. It's a good one. And actually, there are a bunch of questions
in here, I can tell. But I can see how you're in quite a frustrating place, both desiring marriage, wondering if you want to stay in full-time ministry, and still wanting to be effective in what you're called to. So that's awesome. To answer your first question, actually, nowhere does it say in Scripture that women in full-time ministry are not marriable. So let's just, you know, cut that, dispel that rumor, first of all. You know, and honestly, I would encourage you to stay away from men who categorically think so. That's not a healthy position to take or to think through. So, you know what? God can do whatever he wants. I have had to be encouraged by that throughout my years of singleness. And hey, I'm in full-time ministry. So not that I'm, you know, the great example of like, hey, I'm single and here I am getting married. But I know many people who are in ministry and are certainly getting married. So don't worry about that. It's not, you know, if it is being stereotyped, it's only a stereotype. God can certainly get anyone married that he wants to be married. In fact, other girls, you know, my friends who are in secular corporations or in the teaching field or whatever, they often tell me, Lisa, it's probably easier to find a potential mate if you're in ministry. Aren't you just like being thrown across the path of men? Well, we could argue probably both sides. Secondly, you talk about, you know, wanting marriage versus God's moving you on and then, you know, feeling burnt out and stuck kind of as the process of that. So there's a discontentment there. The first thing I want to encourage you in is that restlessness is sometimes a sign of God's moving you on. And that is perfectly okay. You know, it's okay to lean into a sense of restlessness. In fact, we published an article not too long ago on boundless.org that speaks specifically to this. So I would encourage you to go and find that and read it. Obviously, you need to begin by being prayerful about this and really digging into the Word of God, even listening to sermons. I mean, this is a reflective time for you. This is a, like I said, a restless, discontent time. You're going to want to be hearing from the Lord specifically and bringing your concerns and even your complaints to him about where you feel at this point in life. And so be okay with that. Lean into it. Be okay with being uncomfortable and some of the indecision and the unknowns here. That's an okay place to be. Next up, I want you to look for open and closed doors. In fact, I would encourage you, because I've kind of done this a little bit recently too in one area of my life, write a list of various movements in your life, both your questions and your answers. You may see God showing you something specific. Maybe something happened. Maybe you had an appointment with someone. Maybe you heard something in a sermon. Maybe God told you to stop doing something. Maybe he gave you an opportunity or put another little job opportunity across your path. Write all those down and see where God is moving and add them to your prayer list and just track them as you're going along. Also, be open to taking a risk. If God is going to give you something, it may be a completely new opportunity, or it may be just a little something. Don't wait for God to deliver your dream opportunity on a platter. Do whatever is available to you right now. Just do that next thing and be okay with that. Finally, I want to encourage you to be faithful right where you are. You know, the last thing you need to have over this is a bitter spirit and just a sense of not trusting God or feeling worried or anxious or fearful about the future. Again, just as God can get you a husband, God could get you an awesome next opportunity or give you a new sense of direction and purpose right where you are. And so I want to encourage you to lean into your current job, your current calling, even though you've been doing it for 10 years, it's still okay to honor that position and your role in it and your giftings in it right where you are. You can do other life-giving things on the side. Maybe you want to volunteer somewhere. Maybe you want to take on some freelance stuff. Maybe you want to test the waters with a new opportunity that could be possible for you. Make sure that you're doing that. And you're doing life-giving stuff and having new opportunities and growing in other areas. I think the combination of all these things taken in a prayerful, Holy Spirit-guided manner is going to get you far. So hopefully that will give you some direction as you move forward. We will be praying for you here at Boundless. I encourage you to find others to pray with you watchfully in this pursuit as well. All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week's show. We do want to hear from you, write to us at editor@boundless.org with any questions you may have for a future show. Also, pop over to this show. Again, it's episode 564, and you can comment on the blog post there about anything you've heard this week. Again, we do want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving weekend. We hope that you have a few things that you can be thankful for, and as we look towards the end of the year, more things to be thankful for and expectant for heading into the new year. So we will see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.